Good afternoon and welcome to Lunch with Leaders. I'm so glad that you're here. I'm Cindy Morgan. I'm the Vice President of Learning and Organizational Development, and I run the Penn Medicine Academy. I'd like to turn it over to my colleague, Young-In Cho from PMA, to give you a couple of housekeeping tips so you can really fully participate. Young-In?
Thanks, Cindy. Thank you for joining Lunch with Leaders today. We're excited you're here to learn more about the updated blueprints and to hear amazing leadership experiences and lessons from our guests. So for those who are new, welcome, and we love the session to be engaging. So please have your cell phones ready for a poll, share your comment in chat, and then ask questions in the Q&A window. We'll try to get to as many as possible. Thank you. Cindy?
Thanks, Young-In. So welcome back, everyone. For those newbies, welcome for your first Lunch with Leaders. This is a safe space where leaders across Penn Medicine can come together in community and talk about what it's like to be leading during such unprecedented times. You can also find previous recordings on the Lead Strong website. And as we mentioned last week, you can not only watch them and play them back as videos, but you could also download and listen to them as a podcast format. So Gretchen's going to put the Lead Strong page in the chat just in case you've missed back episodes. You don't want to miss any more. So we'd love to hear your feedback on those past episodes. So thanks for watching last week's Lunch with Leaders, or 2 weeks ago, Lunch with Leaders, on the ACT Strategic Roadmap for Creating an Anti-Racist Culture Across Penn Medicine. We got some really nice feedback. We got a shout out from Bob Challender. Thanks for your kind words, Bob. And really appreciate hearing from you. Everything that you and the COVID testing lab folks and Dr. Feldman have been doing, awesome. We'll look forward to having you as our guest in 2 weeks on Lunch with Leaders, and we'll hear even more about how what it's been like to be you during this time. So thank you. We also had a lot of positive feedback coming in from the surveys, from the chat, some additional emails, and people really appreciated hearing all about the various work and initiatives that are teed up for 2021, 2022, and beyond, really around creating an anti-racist environment. We were also really, I want to just applaud you. Everyone in the chat was just on fire in terms of all the great initiatives that are happening locally. And so I just wanted to say thank you. Thank you for sharing. Keep that momentum up. I felt very inspired by everything that you're doing, as well as the stories of Eve, Dwayne, Dr. McKenzie. Really fantastic. So thanks so much for tuning in to our last episode. So we have two big commercials today. So the first one is breaking news. The announcement just went out today that Focus on Economics was launched today. You may remember during the show with Keith Casper, Joan Doyle, and Beth Johnston that we previewed this new material, and today it's live. So it's a big day. You've really asked for ways and mechanisms to both teach yourselves, as well as your new hires, new managers, as well as even some of our new faculty around how do we teach our business to people so they can really understand some of the dynamics at play. And today it's live. We couldn't be more thrilled. Beth Johnston, our former executive director of CPUB, is our facilitator for this content, and she does a really nice job. So don't miss this as an opportunity to both educate yourself as well as your team members. Second commercial. We discussed this last week. Please make sure that you're completing unconscious bias training for you and your teams. You can be leading by example and help your colleagues meet this goal by sharing your reasons and the personal reasons why you took the training and why you think it's important for people to go through this training. Our numbers are a little bit behind, and that's alarming to all of us. So April 1st is the deadline. Big shout out to those who've already completed it. Thank you. If you have tips for getting people through it, for other leaders, please put them in the chat. But we'd really love to see as many people getting the word out there that we want this. And the training's very good, too, I should say. So we'll look forward to seeing our numbers continue to go up. So thanks for listening to the commercials. Now let's talk about today's show, because it's going to be a good one. So a lot's been done recently to update the blueprint, and we want to talk a little bit about what those updates look like, as well as what each of you could be doing as leaders to ensure that what your work is locally aligns with the bigger picture focus of the blueprint for the organization. And quite frankly, I don't know about you, but I'm just dying to hear what it has been like for PJ and Pat and Teresa and Jim and Dr. Pinsky how they're holding up, what the year has been like, what they've learned about themselves as leaders, and maybe even a little about their career journey. So that's really what's coming up too. So we love hearing from you. We really appreciate it. You're really a big part of this show. I think of you as kind of the other guest. So please be active in the chat. I'll try to incorporate as much as possible. And we really love having you share with the other leaders as well. So this is the time. Pull out your cell phones. I'd love to hear from you. Need to know how you're doing. So you'll pull out your cell phones. We're gonna have a quick anonymous poll. You're gonna text Penn Medicine 918 to 22333. If you have a challenge, let us know and we'll help you out. So again, the question, as always, what emotions are you feeling today? What emotions are you hearing today? Thanks, Dr. Feldman. We're very excited about the economics of Penn Medicine. Also, it's a big deal. So while you're telling me what emotions you're feeling today, it is my great pleasure to introduce our guests for this afternoon. We have Dr. PJ Brennan, our Chief Medical Officer and SVP. We have Jim Vallinghoff, the Chief Nursing Officer of Penn Presbyterian. We have the CEO of Pennsylvania Hospital, Teresa Larrabee. We have Dr. Karen Pinsky, the Chief Medical Officer at Chester County, and Pat Sullivan, Dr. Pat Sullivan, our Chief Quality Officer for the health system. So, Pat, PJ, Karen, Jim, Teresa, please come off of mute, video, audio. I'm just so happy to have you here today. So, welcome. All right, I see Teresa and Karen and PJ and Jim and Pat. Awesome, we're all here. Okay, let's see how people are feeling. All right, tired, overwhelmed, busy, hopeful, good, rejuvenated. I love it. Driven, awesome. Too much work, one word, I feel you. Stressed, energy, inspired, a little confused, grateful, gratitude. That's a smiley face. Well, maybe it's kind of a straight mouth smiley face. PJ, do these words surprise you, Teresa? Do these words surprise you?
No, not at all. I think I'm feeling all of them.
I think
I would
so too.
agree. The one that certainly resonates today is the one that's chilly, but we can't move past overwhelmed. Hopeful, I think, is certainly one that we're hearing quite a bit as we're rolling out our vaccines.
Yeah, I'm hearing that too. Snow comes up also more. No. Well, thanks so much for being on. And Casey, thanks so much for giving us the poll. Appreciate that. So, PJ, I'd love to start with you. Congratulations on another amazing blueprint. What prompted you to refresh the blueprint and why now? I'd love to hear a little more about the evolution of kind of how this has helped our organization.
Sure. Are we going to bring up the slides, Cindy?
Yeah, Casey, would you mind showing the slide about the evolution of the blueprint?
So the most immediate answer to your question of why now is because it was time. We began the work of the blueprint, and this slide illustrates it, back in 2006 and launched the first version in 2007. And the most recent version was launched in 2014. So it had a shelf life of about 6 years, and I think a lot of people felt that it still had resonance with the organization. But it was a new time. It was a new decade. We had new leadership in Penn Medicine, and it was really time to revisit how healthcare had changed and how our thinking had been changed. And what this slide really illustrates in each of the columns is the evolution of the language, which reflects our thinking about the blueprint. So transitions in care in 2007 evolved into continuity, and reducing variations in care evolved into value, and engagement stayed as engagement, but accountability, which was really the foundational element of our blueprint with the unit-based clinical leadership teams, became a foundational element in the 2014 version. So it really was time. Every time we talk about the blueprint, I feel like it evolves a little bit. So if we go to the
That's
next
exciting.
slide.
Yeah. I wanted to say I started here at Penn Medicine at 2014. So that was right when the last iteration was coming out. So I feel like very honored to have seen through one full iteration. And I'm sure many of our guests have seen through many of these iterations, which is pretty impressive. What's changed? Where do you think, how has it evolved?
Well, it's evolved in a number of ways. It's evolved in the way that we've biopsied the organization, as I like to say. In the first version, we sampled the opinions of 24 thought leaders, and I think we got it directionally right, but we didn't develop much investment from the organization in the blueprint. In the most recent version, we've interviewed over 1,000 people, wow. mostly in large groups, but over an extended period of time. It took us a while to put this together. And a number of issues emerged in the course of this that I think will come out over the next hour in our conversations. But, you know, central to this version of the blueprint was a sense of safety. Equity came out, addressing the patient experience, but not just coming here to get safe care, but to have the best outcomes. There was a lot of impetus in the interviews that we did that, you know, we should really be focused on safety, and safety should be the central issue for us. And it is a central issue, but it's not the only one. People come here not just to get safe care, but to get the best outcomes. And so this, we really like this construct of these three circles of experience, safety, and outcomes, leading us towards the new version of the blueprint. So this is kind of our poster for the blueprint. We have, we're calling it One Penn Medicine, and we have three goals. I think it's important to have pithy and concise goals that we can all articulate. So our goals are to have an exceptional experience, to deliver care with zero harm to patients and staff. And staff was particularly important. It was kind of one of the surprise issues, I think, in this version of the blueprint, how much the participants talked about staff safety, and then excellence in patient-centered outcomes. And then on the right, you have the five strategies, and they're aligned as they are for a reason. High reliability is at the point, sort of pointing us towards the future. Diversity and inclusion is at the top because we felt this was so important. It was one of the foundational elements of the previous version of the blueprint, but many people felt that those foundational elements had been sort of sublimated and had not been addressed enough. And as we went through this, all of the issues were occurring in this country related to inclusion, diversity, and justice, and equity. And we really felt as it was important to state that right at the top of our strategies. So, these strategies are the things that are going to carry us forward. And then what we hope for the organization is that it will take these goals and strategies and use them to align the work of individual units so that everyone can think in their unit, in their workplace, how they're addressing diversity and equity, how they're addressing continuity of care, high reliability, patient and staff engagement, and innovation. So we think that this, while it may have been done at sort of a high level, albeit with a lot of input from the organization, that it really cascades right to the front lines and can be a tool that everyone uses to address our most aspirational goals for the organization.
Okay, thanks. I really love it. I think it's clean. It speaks to our key issues. I'd love to hear from the audience. What are your reactions? What do you think of One Penn Medicine? What do you think of the strategies as well as the three goals? I'd love to hear what stands out to you. PJ, what prompted One Penn Medicine? I know you were very intentional about that wording. I'd love to hear a little bit more about how you and the organization came up with that.
Well, we're a bigger organization. Much bigger organization than we were at the time of the first blueprint, and alignment and being a system is really something that I think is very important. I think that wherever a patient goes for care in Penn Medicine, they should receive the same level of care. Now, everybody doesn't have to have the same technology, but they ought to have the same great experience, and they ought to use the entire organization as one system to achieve the best level of care. So One Penn Medicine really kind of captures that idea in my mind, and it speaks to consistency, standards, and alignment across the system.
Thanks, I appreciate that. Would love to hear from people in the audience of what their initial reactions are. You may have already seen some of this, but I'd love to hear your thoughts on that. Pat, let me ask you, how has Blueprint impacted COVID vaccine distribution? And I should say thanks for your leadership on that. PJ, thanks for yours as well. I wanna thank you personally a little later in the show, but Pat, how has the Blueprint been enacted through some of these exercises that we've been doing lately, or these activities?
You know, PJ talked about the high reliability organizations and how that's a key strategy of ours to, in order to be able to keep staff safe and keep patients safe. And so when I think about high reliability, it's really an operating principle that applies to all of the areas of our organization. So high reliability is really about the executing processes and practices consistently over time. And so that's my something I've learned from my good colleague, Dr. Karapinski. And so it means that we are executing processes the same way when there's evidence, and it's something that we have deemed it to be the right way to do it, that we're doing that, whether it's in our budgeting processes, in our patient care, in our admitting process, in our human resource processes, right? So it's really, and so I think the truth is, though, we've been on a high reliability journey for quite a while, right? This is the first time that we've really named it explicitly in terms of, you know, really taking a stance and saying, this is something that we stand for. This is something, a journey that we want to be on. But when you think about high reliability, I think it's really foundational in terms of how we keep our patients and staff safe. So when you think, and I was thinking back to COVID, to the question, thank you very much, Cindy, for a tip on that. And I think about COVID and the examples, there are so many of them that we have adopted during COVID to be able to improve safety, improve, reduce morbidity and mortality. So when you think about some of the examples, the first one I think about is the Critical Care Alliance, right? And through evidence and trial and error, when those patients came in early on, we were really, we didn't know how to do, how to care for patients that we hadn't seen before. And so what they did, though, was the alliance got together across the system and they developed practices that really reduce morbidity and mortality, such as proning patients, right, on their stomach. You know, we could ventilate them better. There's a whole host of those that really came to light and were developed during, since COVID, the pandemic started. One other one, so we developed during COVID HR policies, right, and ways to both support employees who are remotely working, who, you know, need help with some element of work-life balance, illness, et cetera. So it's clinical, it's administrative. But then just one last example I wanted to give is to say, you know, PJ mentioned how important systemness is and how we think about things across the health system and how we learn from each other, right? And we support those. But I think within each entity, it's really important to have consistency in processes and practices, and maybe even more so in terms of that. And so the best example that right off the top of my head was how the staff at each entity have developed vaccine clinics, right? I mean, unbelievable work, you know, and if you go in there, I think, you know, people who see it all the time, it works the same all the time, right? It really, and that has allowed us to both keep staff and our patients, whether it be our employees or our real patients, safe. But it also allows us to really be the most efficient and be able to maximize the number of people that we vaccinate. And so I think that these are just examples. Now, of course, you know, we're not a nuclear power plant. We're not, you know, we're a healthcare organization. So it's not always possible to have everything synchronized and, you know, working in the same way, because patients are human beings and we have to deal with that. But to the extent that we're able to do that more consistently, it really frees up our time to be able to think about and learn and implement new processes and practices that are really important, you know, that we, where we can be on the forefront of medicine. And so that's, I guess, that's what I wanted to really highlight. One last thing I would say is,
An important part of HRO, highly reliable organizations, is the learning organization. And I think, you know, Cindy, that comes directly to PMA and all the great work that you do. But I think it really speaks to how important it is that not only do we learn from our mistakes, but even more importantly, we learn from our successes. And from those successes, we can share it with each other. We can adopt them across the health system and continue to not have everyone need to reinvent the wheel. And so this focus on success and not just when things go wrong, I think is another really important component that we've seen, you know, really illustrated through COVID. So let me stop there.
You said so much. I got to unpack a couple of things. It was awesome. I have to first give a shout out to Teresa and the team over at PAH. Not only did I feel like it was a vaccine amazing process, I felt like it was kind of like a joy clinic. It was like the happiest people. It was amazing. I've heard from others that the one at PCAN and Chester County, other hospitals, they all had a same joy vibe in the vaccine process. So I like that the HRO concept really applies to everyone. Someone even texted me today. They're like, oh, you should work the joy clinic, this person was calling it. And they said some nuns who are patients of ours came in and their feet were, they didn't even touch the ground, but they were just so elated to be getting their vaccine that it like made a huge difference to everyone. So thanks to everyone working at the local levels to do that. And I really appreciated the impact kind of that framework. PJ, good news. The chat is on fire. So many people really resonating with the one pen medicine and thinking across the system. People like the simplicity of the one pager. People like the visual a lot. And let's see. Mike Posenchek says, one pen medicine makes me feel like this applies to everyone, not just those with quality or safety in their title. Mm-hmm. Marjorie Michelle loves the addition of staff in there and makes it a lot easier to translate. Dan Feinberg, we're all in this together to provide the best, safest care in a cutting edge way. Kurt Messner says that the strategies are clear and timely and the dynamic and dynamically reinforced with great visuals. Joanne says, team, together everyone accomplishes more. People love the idea of learning, Pat, and sharing from successes. I'll just say, I think that we're a little hard on ourselves here at Penn Medicine at times. Myself included, it's like, oh, what could I have done differently? How could I be better? I got to keep striving. But boy, a lot of things go right around here. And we sometimes forget to like say, hey, thanks, or point it out, or catch someone doing right and give them the feedback. Positive feedback is still feedback, everyone. So Pat, so many real pearls there. Thank you for sharing. So I want to talk a little bit about how we're translating the blueprint down more at the entity level. Teresa, let me start with you. From a CEO's perspective, how are you approaching implementation of the blueprint at Pennsylvania Hospital?
Sure, Cindy. Thank you. So the one thing that we often like to say about the blueprint is that it is evergreen. And I will date myself a little bit and say that I came when PJ started this architecture. I remember when you went on the roadshow around the country because it was so revolutionary that we were building this architecture. So when we do initiatives at Pennsylvania Hospital, we always like to start with the strategic plan and with the blueprint and identifying how it links in, because it's very grounding for people to understand what the problem is we're trying to solve. The second thing is our CMO and our CNO, Drs. Feinberg and Dr. Craig, went on the roadshow. They met with a lot of organizational leaders, our clinical leaders, our service directors, and our frontline. And it was really a bi-directional conversation. They were sharing the conversation that was happening at the CNO, CMO table, and they were hearing how the staff are thinking about their patient populations, how they're thinking about their own safety and the opportunities there. And then connecting the dots for the frontline. If we think about the maternal mortality, right? So Pennsylvania Hospital, as we know, delivers a lot of babies. That really resonated here with the team that it was time to pivot and to think about that. COVID and how it had such an uneven impact on our community and the really the front line and how they were applying what we were learning, as Pat says, in the moment about this disease, I think was really important. And having this backstop, this framework of the blueprint, just really resonated with us. So that's how we've been bringing it to life at PENCY.
Thanks, I really appreciate that. Dr. Pinsky, can you talk to us a little bit about, from a CMO's perspective, how do you think the blueprint shapes practice styles and focus of providers? How do we translate that right down to our providers?
Thanks, Cindy. I really enjoyed that question and pondered it for a while before thinking about how I was going to respond. And I think the way I can put it most simply is to say that it gives the physicians, all the providers, the answer to the question, why? Why are we doing what we're doing? Why are the expectations the way they are? I think a lot of clinicians often feel, physicians and providers in particular, they feel that they're told to do things for regulatory reasons, because it's the policy, because it's the standard. And the more we convey expectations in terms of that structure, I think it doesn't resonate. But what does resonate is the blueprint. The blueprint is the why. The blueprint is when you have some cultural humility and you're walking in to see a patient in clinic who may not feel as comfortable with the language or has cultural differences from you, taking the time to really appreciate what that patient needs. And you're not doing it because we know that JACO says you should have an interpreter in the room. You're doing it because that's what we are expected based on our blueprint. It's the goals that we've set and it's the strategy that we've set. Another example that resonated with me, and I hope it resonates for folks out there, is I agree with Pat that we should always be doing success analysis, but we do spend a lot of time when things don't go well. And what historically has happened when things haven't gone well is that physicians, providers, have expressed denial. They've expressed shame sometimes blame. But what I think this blueprint articulates is that what we expect to see and what we want to see is curiosity. We want to say something didn't go well, and I wanted to come to that with a questioning attitude, with curiosity, and understand, based on this framework, based on the blueprint, how we could have done things differently. So for me, in summary, I would say it frames the why for clinicians. And when we can circle back and articulate the why, and I think this does a beautiful job of that, it makes it so much easier to compel and to direct and to expect the kinds of behaviors that make us all better.
Thanks, Karen. Sorry for the little pen accident. I sometimes jot down notes as people are saying things so I don't forget. Karen, I really love what you said about finding that purpose and having that purpose be represented in the blueprint. There's this leadership book, it's called Drive by Pink. Daniel Pink is the author. At first, the person who recommended the book to me, I thought that the book title was Drive by Pink, but it's not. It's Drive by Daniel Pink. But he talks about the three drivers of why people get up and come to work every day: autonomy, mastery, and purpose. And I really think that the blueprint really speaks to purpose, mm-hmm. not just for the providers, but maybe for all of us. Jim, similar question. Is that the same for the impact that the blueprint has on nursing? And how do you think that this will impact our outcomes? Will it be different substantively?
Good question, Cindy. But before I answer that question, I just want to add on to PJ's comments about the evolution of the blueprint. I've been very fortunate to be a leader here in the organization for every one of the versions that have come out. And I think what's really
started right after high school, Jim, or what?
Yeah, well, thank you for that. What's really nice about it is that we don't start over every time. Mm-hmm. We build upon the strengths of the blueprint, and then we take what we've learned over those couple of years and apply it and revise it and refresh it. So no one has to relearn every time we roll out a new version of the blueprint. And to Pat's comment about high reliability, we are pioneers in a way in starting high reliability, back with the first version in making sure that we had safe transitions in care. And then the next time, you know, we really set bold goals, which is a tenet of high reliability. And I have a picture on my desk of Pat and PJ, myself, and several other leaders being in the organization on June 30th of 2014 at midnight, toasting to what we had achieved. And although we didn't achieve those bold goals of, you know, hitting zero readmissions for our 7-day readmission rates, but we really made a significant improvement. So, you know, it's exciting just to see all of these different versions. But back to your original question, you know, about nursing, I think, you know, all versions of the blueprint have been instrumental in coordinating and driving practice for not only our nursing leaders, but our frontline nurses as well. You know, it's a framework that we've all used to drive our outcomes to become a very get the very prestigious award of being a magnet designated organization. You know, and all five or six of our hospitals are magnet designated, and as a magnet designated organization, you know, we're measured on our nursing sensitive outcomes, our patient experience scores, and our nurse satisfaction. And I think the blueprint helps leaders, including our shared governance leaders, by using the framework to evaluate the opportunities in their specific areas, and then aligning their goals and strategies to achieve that desired outcome that they've identified. And if I could add as well, you know, as a magnet organization, we're required to have a professional practice model, which basically describes, you know, how we practice nursing at the bedside. And the blueprint goals and strategies are used to inform and develop those models at each of the entities. And each entity has their own professional practice model, except for HUP and Presby and Good Shepherd Penn Partners. We collaborated just because of timing, and that's why it's only the three of us, but we collaborated on one single professional practice model that we share across the entities. And the blueprint was our starting point. It was the foundation that we built upon.
Thanks so much, Jim. And again, whoop, whoop, shout out to everyone being magnet designated. I mean, I think sometimes this is one of those moments where we sort of take it for granted, but that's a lot of work and a really huge honor. So I wanted to just give a shout out there. So, Teresa, let me go to you. What advice do you have for our leaders tuned in today or watching on playback as they're aligning their work of their department with the updated blueprint? How do you think they should make it resonate with their team?
So make it situation focused. So we've pulled the data. I think there's no surprise that I love data. So we pulled the data around maternal mortality and understood what the opportunity was, what was unique about our populations. And really then release the energies around innovation on what the opportunities were for us to improve what our outcomes are. So I think the more you can make it resonate with the front line, with the work that they are doing every day, you have success. And really encouraging that innovation. I also think that's what gets people out of bed in the morning as well. Mm-hmm.
Thanks, Teresa. I love that answer. I'd love to go to the audience and ask them, how are you aligning your department's work with the updated blueprint? Do you have any tips or strategies that have made this work resonate with your teams? I'd love to, PJ, ask you, do you have any advice for these leaders? I'm hoping that they'll share advice with one another, but I'd love to hear your thoughts if there are things that people can be doing, leaders can be doing to make this really resonate with teams.
Well, it's always, you know, as we attend quality improvement meetings, you know, make rounds in hospitals, it's always great to see that the blueprint is alive in those places, that, you know, people are using the poster slides and tying it back to their work. So I think, you know, we really, the blueprint wouldn't be in its first, in its fourth version, if it wasn't alive in the organization and wasn't an evolving, living document. So, you know, I would hope that our leaders will keep it alive and keep it in front of their staff, because I think it's, you know, in a lot of ways, it's a stimulus. It's something that provokes thought and encourages people to, you know, think in terms of their workplace, what they're doing, and what diversity and inclusion means, and what high reliability means. There's tremendous creativity and innovation in the organization. You know, I'll tell you, I have a relative in another local hospital right now, and the contrast could not be greater. And the contrast is really all about the people and the kind of people we have in Penn Medicine who are so committed to being better all the time. And I think, you know, they can use this as a framework to be better.
Thanks, PJ. Well said. Kelly Wilson says she loves the why. The example of how providers and staff can feel shame when things don't go well really resonates. We see that a lot in the experience world. We know that our people intend to give their best, but intentions and perceptions don't always match. Seeing experience correlated with safety and quality in the blueprint makes such a huge statement to its relevance and importance. Agree. So I would love to hear from each of you in the audience around some of the things you do to keep this as a stimulus for aligning your staff, and any tips that you have for thinking about this new iteration and introducing some of its new language and new called out strategies. In the meantime, let me turn our attention back to the panelists and really talk to you as leaders in our organization. First, let me just say thank you. I don't even know how you're all standing up at this point. The work has just been Herculean. Thank you for your leadership. It's been really remarkable and inspiring to watch each of you in your various areas. PJ, you've just been nothing short of amazing. So thank you. What's it been like to be you as leaders during this challenging time? What have you learned about yourself? Maybe I could start with you, Jim.
Yeah, it's been, overall, it's been great. It's been, you know, all of the words that were described in the word cloud earlier, you know, it's been extremely challenging, but so inspiring to see how people collaborated, the camaraderie that happened during this whole pandemic, how people came together and covered for each other and helped each other out and picked up extra shifts because their colleagues were exposed and needed to be isolated, and all of those different things, you know, OR coming in and serving as subject matter experts around donning and doffing, you know, when not all clinicians were as comfortable going in and out of rooms. So for me, it's been, you know, tough but wonderful to see. And I'm so, so proud of everybody that I work with, all of the nurses, all of the other areas that I work with. And I know, like PJ just described about what he saw, you know, at another organization, I know what we have here is really, really special. So I'm really proud of that.
Well, how about you, Karen?
I was going to call on you anyway. Well, there you go. I guess I didn't raise my hand. Sorry.
No problem. I was going to you anyway.
Yeah, I would like to just tag on to something that Jim said and that PJ said. So PJ said that the blueprint is a stimulus. And I think that's what COVID was for us as an organization. Mm-hmm. I think it stimulated an incredible change in the way that we come together as a system. And it really is emblematic of that one Penn Medicine. And at every point I felt, and sometimes, you know, out in the community and in a smaller hospital, we can feel a little separated. And at every point, whether it was on a call or discussing how much PPE we had or discussing how our epidemiology colleagues were discriminating between different CDC guidelines. It was just a very collaborative process, and it was a stimulus for making us feel more a whole part of Penn Medicine. So I really, as much as COVID has been difficult, it really did generate some wonderful outcomes.
Well said. PJ, I mean, I think of Dr. Fauci, but like literally like 1 centimeter below Dr. Fauci in my mind is you. I mean, I would turn on the TV, there you were. I'd open the Philadelphia Inquirer, there you were. Have you slept at all? And what is the secret to your stamina?
Well, I'll tell you, after I got my second shot of vaccine, I had a little bit of fever and muscle aches. And I went to bed early and I slept straight through for 10 hours and I felt great. So I probably was a little sleep deprived, and the vaccine in addition to generating immunity helped me with my sleep. You know, I agree with the things that Jim and Karen have said. And you're overly generous. There's nobody like Tony Fauci. The experience of this has been like nothing in my entire career. I'm grateful to have had the opportunity to work through it. You know, for someone with my background, there I have to admit there is an exhilaration to doing this kind of work, as awful as the pandemic has been. But I've felt everything that was expressed in those word clouds. There has been the full spectrum of emotion, but the ability to work together, the opportunity, I should say, to work together with people in Penn Medicine has just been extraordinary. And that has, you know, if I put a second word into the word cloud today, it would be hope. And Penn Medicine is what gives me that hope. The people of Penn Medicine again, and the opportunity to work with all of them. The mass meetings that we've had, you know, the town halls with 3,000 people on them. This meeting that has 353 attendees at the moment. You know, the meetings that we had all through the first wave across the system every day, and the CMO CNO meetings. Those things give me, you know, great optimism and hope, and really have sustained me through all of this.
Can I have one 2 cents in here?
Yeah, please.
Thanks. Two things. One, my overwhelming experience is humility for two reasons. And the first is, you know, it has just been breathtaking to understand sort of the depth and breadth of talent and commitment, you know, through all of this. That, you know, under normal, and I say that, you know, circumstances, you don't always see it. Or we see it in one place, but not, you know, so broadly in the organization. And just from a personal perspective, you know, some of you know, I was an ICU nurse by training, and I have spent just about all my career within the walls of a hospital or a health system. And, you know, here I was, like in the second week of the pandemic, out there working with people to set up a community testing site. I knew nothing about being out there. It is different, you know, and then now setting up a community vaccine clinic, you know, out in West Philly, where we're going to do the first one this Saturday. I mean, it has just made me think that maybe you can teach an old dog new tricks.
I don't know who the dog is in this scenario. Like, that's definitely not you, Pat, but I will always remember a picture coming in around our first tent set up for COVID testing, and the winds were whipping through, and it was cold, and it was spring, and there you are, and the team. It was just such a proud moment for so many of us. I also just want to recognize all of these leaders who are on the call today and the remarkable commitment that each of them have demonstrated. Teresa, I want to just make sure I give you a moment as well. Learning about yourself as a leader, reflections on this time.
Yeah, so I would certainly say that it resonates with the book you just mentioned. You know, autonomy, this drive. That's what really brought the team in every day. And it was like they were going to battle. There was this very purposeful walk of the team coming in on every single shift. I think the other thing was there was no doubt that we were going to succeed, however you define that, that there was great confidence in being part of Penn Medicine, that we were going to do this as well as we could, pivot as quickly as we could, and innovate. So I think it was with that confidence that people just kept coming in and driving every single day. So it was great to be part of the organization and learn from each other.
Thanks, I agree. Oh, sorry, Jim, go ahead.
I just wanted to say that I agree with your comment about PJ being our Dr. Fauci, and I think we need to campaign the Phillies to get him to throw out the first pitch of the season. Sure, we have 350 attendees here, will probably be willing to sign that petition. So.
Listen, I am in. I will do whatever I can. PJ, it would be so great. And you'd really get it over the plate also, which would make us even more proud.
I think I could do better than Tony Fauci.
I was going to say, you can't do worse.
Maybe that's the only thing I could do better than that.
And likes this on the chat as well, and I'm sure others do. So we've received a lot of feedback from our audience that they'd love to hear a pearl or a nugget of wisdom for how you've navigated your own career journey. Knowing that we're sort of coming close to time, maybe you could share it in a lightning round, 1 minute or less kind of format. Teresa, did you always know it was the CEO track when you were in the dog days of your finance career? Give me a nugget.
No, it was, and I've seen it from the frontline staff, the ability to be resilient and to embrace ambiguity, which is very difficult, especially when you're talking about life and death. But I've seen it really come to life, and I'm so proud of the team.
What about your own career journey? Did you know that you wanted to be a CEO early? How did you know?
You know what? I wanted to make sure that I was contributing at the highest level in whatever role that I was. And that meant that you had to take on things that you weren't completely comfortable with and learn. So be in that forever learning, Pat. You said that. A learning organization. So really that learning mindset.
Thank you. What about you, Dr. Pinsky? Any nuggets of wisdom that around your own career journey?
I think I would offer my nugget of wisdom would be that you need to be earnest and your authentic self. The people talk about, you know, fake it till you make it. I'm not so sure that that is necessarily what you need to do. You need to be comfortably uncomfortable, just like Teresa said. You need to challenge yourself and know that you're not going to be perfect at everything. But I think there's got to be some authenticity, and it's okay to reveal some weakness. It's okay to reveal some doubt. I don't think there's anything wrong with saying, I don't know, let me look it up. And so authenticity, humility was already mentioned by Pat, but certainly being true to oneself. I think you make a better leader and people want to follow you more when you're real.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think we've seen that really through every one of our Lunch with Leaders panelists. This is just sort of a messy process of becoming, and we're all, our organization, each of us as humans, as leaders, it's messy. So I think it's okay to say, oh, I'm a little bit messy, and we can come together and be in community and say, okay, but I'm still working at it. Pat, what about you? Career nugget of wisdom that you'd share that's made you successful throughout your journey?
Let me pick up on something Teresa said in terms of ambiguity. So when I was first hired here at Penn, Ralph Muller was the CEO, said, I like to hire people who somebody tells me has talent and I give them things to do and I see where they're best fit in. And if you're up for that ambiguity, I'd like to hire you. And so I think that has really been a big part of my career. And my secret is I always look for unoccupied space. And really see where the opportunities are and understand, you know, the dynamics and, you know, some needs that may be evolving and unmet within the organization.
Thanks. Jim, same question. I'd love to hear a pearl of wisdom around how you've navigated your own career and your journey.
Sure. I'd say go out of your comfort zone. I started as a staff nurse at HUP. With an associate's degree. And after two leadership positions, I decided to go out to home care and hospice. And like Pat, I was a critical care nurse. And people thought I was crazy leaving, you know, the flagship hospital to go out to home care and hospice. But it was one of the best things that I've ever done. I learned so much about the business and about the continuum of care. And now I'm in the chief nursing officer role. So go out of your comfort zone, try new things.
Thanks, Jim. Let me turn it over to what Phil Ocala is calling the Penn Medicine Dr. Fauci, PJ Brennan.
Thanks, Cindy. I never intended to be in this role. I intended to be a clinician all my life. And early in my career, I began to see possibilities in doing what I do, but doing it on a different scale in leadership roles. And what I became interested in was in solving different kinds of problems. There was tremendous gratification at the bedside, but I also saw that there was an opportunity to do things with populations that would be, you know, very personally gratifying, but solve other people's problems as well. And I think that that's a critical issue for a leader, that you need to be thinking about others and thinking about finding solutions for other people. And I encourage people who come to me for mentorship or advice about what they should do. And I tell them that, you know, they're young in their career, try to figure out what your division chief or your department chair needs to have solved and try to help them solve those problems. And you'll be recognized for that, and your career will advance if you wanted to in that direction.
Thanks, PJ. I think we've all had a lot of experience, maybe like dog years time over the last year of trying to solve a lot of problems. So I really like that advice. So we're going to start a new segment today on Lunch with Leaders. It's called Inspiration Corner. Casey, would you mind putting up the slide? Listen, I don't know. It's February. It feels like a forever month. It's bleak. It's snowing all the time. We're still like pushing our way through this. So wanted to talk to each of you panelists and audience members. What's bringing you joy? How are you continuing to rejuvenate yourself, recharge your batteries? I know I took Dr. Liz Howe, chair of OBGYN's advice on the show that she was onboarding, and I watched Ted Lasso. That was like the show that I needed that I didn't even know I needed, so I want to give a shout out to that. I also got a letter that says spreading good vibes through various letters to various people might be an idea that you try as well. Audience, what are you doing? What are you listening to, watching, listening? Anything that you could share that's helping you recharge your batteries, spark your joy, inspiring you? And I'd love to hear that Gretchen's liking Ted Lasso also. Karen, anything that you're doing to spark your joy or any recommendations you have for our audience?
I'm not sure that it's a recommendation, but I can describe what I'm doing to spark my joy. And that is Please. That I am training to run a full marathon because Ooh. I had on my bucket list. And I've been doing Pilates, which I think also I want to add is a lot like the blueprint, because every time I do a Pilates exercise, I say, is that supposed to be strengthening my shoulders or my arms? And she says, no, everything in Pilates is to strengthen your core. And it's kind of like the blueprint. Everything strengthens your core. So that's what I'm doing. Marathon and Pilates, and I'll let you know how it goes.
Awesome. We're cheering for you. What about you, Jim, in like 30 seconds or less?
Sure. My dogs and my family bring me joy. I love spending time with them. As far as reading, I would say I just read Cast. It was one of the most disturbing books I've ever read, but I think one of the most important, and I recommend that every white person in this country read that book. And as far as watching, in and of itself, it's a 90-minute show on Hulu. It's about a magician. It was so profound and emotional and just an amazing piece of art. So I recommend it highly.
Thanks. Teresa, in 10 seconds or less, anything you'd recommend?
Video cooking classes.
Cool. How about you, Pat?
Reading more than usual and learning from history what to put in context what's going on in our world today.
Thanks. PJ, let me give you the final word. Anything that you've even had time for?
Yeah, I would come home and crash, basically. But I did a fair amount of Netflix binging. But my wife and I, Anne, have discovered a show on Saturday nights on WHYY that's sort of quirky and an ensemble cast called Doc Martin, which is about a very odd physician. who works in the Cornwall section, region of England, and we watch that every Saturday night. I'm reading a great book, very slowly, actually, because every sentence is so packed that I have to stop and think about it. But it's Joe Biden and Catholicism in the United States. And it's written by a friend of mine, Massimo Fagioli, who's put a plug in for him, who's a theologian and historian at Villanova. And it's about two interesting subjects, and it's really, really stimulating. And then I listen to WRTI as much as I can because the news just wears me out. So I listen to that for musical relief. And there are a lot of things in the chats that are great, that are, you know, I saw Richard Wender is going to become a grandparent soon. So am I. And, you know, so I have a lot of resonance with the things I see in the chat.
Awesome. Well, thank you. Well, let me just thank all of my panelists today, all my guests. You've been amazing. And thank you for your great insights and tips. Thank you for everything that you've done this past year with COVID, with resurgence, with vaccinations, with just keeping everything going. Thank you for all of your efforts. You've been nothing short of inspirational, each and every one of you. So thank you. So let me set up our show for February 25th. We have a very big show. One thing that we've been hearing consistently is that you're a little tired and a little crispy, and your teams are tired and a little crispy. And how are we going to keep going as much as we are looking forward to things that are coming this year? How are we going to revive? And so we have an amazing panel next show, Self-Care Strategies for Managing Through 2021. Our guests will be Thea Gallagher, Angela from Chester County, Bob Challender, and Craig Lowndes from PMA. And we have a great lineup of Lunch with Leaders in the months ahead. So make sure you're marking your calendars now. March 11th is going to be a very special show. Wax on, wax off. Girls just want to have fun. We're going to talk 80s pop culture and all the leadership and life lessons that we can learn from an author, Chris Clues. You won't want to miss it. I think we're going to have some really fun surprises up our sleeve, not so dissimilar from the Christmas show, but some really good nuggets. And I'll look forward to hearing your favorite 80s pop culture moments as well. So I want to thank each of you for joining us today. Thank you for your service. Thank you for all that you're doing in your leadership roles during these challenging times. We're much stronger together, and we're making such a difference. So please take really good care this week. We're so grateful. A couple reminders, go to the Lead Strong site for past recordings, slides, other useful tools. We always welcome your feedback, your letters, your ideas for shows. You can get CME and CE credits for attending the session. Don't forget to type leave on your phone, phone to exit poll everywhere. Take good care. Have a good week, and I'll look forward to seeing you next time on Lunch with Leaders.